Welcome to Holmes & Hops. Holmes & Hops is proudly supported by Platt Insurance, your local independent insurance agency offering auto, home, life, business, and farm insurance. We also have a team of specialists that can help you with insuring your brewery or winery. Platt Insurance, helping you protect your tomorrows. For more information or quote, please call us at 330-856-6244 or visit us on our website at www.plattinsurance.com. That's www.plattinsurance.com. Welcome to Homes and Hops. Today's special guest is Justin Homer, owner of the Casual Pint at the Shops of Borman Plaza.
Hello.
And our special guest host today is Eric Cromer of Union Home Mortgage.
Hola.
Thank you both for coming over today to hang out at my humble abode. Justin, what delectable drinks did you bring us from the Casual Pint?
Well, we got a nice little mix of some Europeans, some ciders, beers, and some one of our local State Line Brewer Guild members. We've got a 2014 vintage cider from Herefordshire, England. We also have a honey beer from Poland.
And that's what I'm drinking, right?
Yeah, that's Browar Staropolski, which means brewery, Staropolski brew. It's around the capital of Warsaw. A lot of people don't know this, but me and my wife's parents are from Poland, so we speak a little Polish. She's more fluent. I just can get around if I get lost.
Good to know.
But that's an amazing style, and it's really beautiful beer.
And what's Eric drinking?
He is drinking the Henny's Herefordshire Vintaged 2014 Still Cider. So try to say that 15 times.
Oh, you can say it once. How about you?
No, but I don't do a lot of ciders, and this is hands down the best I've ever had. Easily.
Yeah.
So thanks for bringing it.
No worries. Yeah. This is one of the top cider producers in England. We've kind of made a big push since we got our wine license about a year and a half ago with wine, cider, and meads. We try to balance out some of our, everybody knows we do really good with our beers, but we've added like a little kind of a little extension to us with the ciders and the wines and a little bit and kind of working it with some of the local wineries and cideries, presses and things like that. We're just trying to add a little more to the, proverbial ammunition.
So. Oh, and how about you? What are you drinking?
Oh, Darlene from Modern Methods. Just good lager. I don't know what it is lately. I've been a lager kick. I guess it's like everybody says, the chef. If the chef's sitting there cooking, cioppino and other things that are amazing dishes and they just want to have a cheeseburger. Sometimes it's kind of like that. I just like having a pilsner and a lager once in a while.
Nice. So I thought it would be interesting to have you, Justin, and Eric both here at the same time because you guys have a little bit of a same history. So both of you, well, you're still a mortgage broker, and I need to digress for one moment and just tell everyone out there what a phenomenal broker Eric Cromer is. And that is without a doubt the truth.
Thank you.
He has definitely been my go-to and has been absolutely phenomenal in getting my deals done. But not only that, but the client services and everything else that goes along with it. You don't seem to steer people down the wrong path. You let them know at the beginning whether or not what they want is actually feasible. So I do appreciate that very much in having somebody like you in the industry with me.
Cool.
Because it makes my job better.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying. And real quick, you just mentioned on something that goes a little bit further than what we do is, like you just said, client services. Everybody in the space, customer service is no longer enough. So just like Casual Pint, you've got to create an experience rather than just service, right? So I think we all three pride ourselves on providing a great customer experience rather than just great customer service anymore. So I'm glad you mentioned it. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. And then we have Justin here, who was a mortgage broker in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yep. I used to, at one point I did 44 states. in my 20s. It was kind of I like to kid my Wolves of Wall Street days of lending back in the good old late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah, I loved it. I can understand why you do it. It's one of the best gigs I ever had. I loved it, especially when I was golfing in between. But one of the things I think that has pushed me towards going into the industry that I'm in right now is what you touched upon is the service and the aspect of it. You know, whether it was driving to somebody's house with documents at midnight with someone getting off work, or in my case, explaining to somebody, you know, a region of a Bordeaux I'm pouring right now, or talking about birdfish or modern methods or a noble creature or Biker Brewhouse or one of our local guys. It's the same detail of explanation, the same way we would do the documents like VA loans, FHA loans, and yeah. To the same way we kind of look into the details of Fugle hops from England. It's amazing. Excuse me. It's amazing how that correlates. It kind of blows my mind sometimes.
Yeah.
So my first question is, are you from this area, the Valley, or are you from Nashville?
Here's the best part. Originally from the Pittsburgh area, moved down there after college, lived there for 10 years, and met my wife, who was in the military.
Oh.
My wife is a now honorably discharged Army doctor previously, so she actually practices here locally. She's a Cleveland girl. Yeah, I tried to explain that one on football season, Steelers and Browns. So we both agree we
go
really
Browns.
Don't. Yeah, I get that a lot. But we both agree that we both don't like the Ravens, and we cheer for each other's team when the Ravens play the Steelers or the Browns, and that keeps my marriage slightly happy. But we decided when she got out of the military, a career change, just wanted something different. Don't get me wrong, I still love the mortgages, and I still watch the business news in the morning when I'm counting my drawers. It's kind of my guilty pleasure. I'm like, what's the 10-year treasury doing?
Yeah, right. We just got done talking about.
There's a whole conversation about the rates right now.
Yeah, they are ridiculously low. It's actually, historically speaking, we might be, you know, I'd have to go do some data tracking, but we very well could be in the lowest 10-year treasury yield right now ever in the history of the 10-year treasury, which goes back at least 100 years. So as we sit today, we could be at the bottom, which is amazing.
That's insane. And I remember when the fallout hit and you watched, go from like a 2.2 10-year curve to like 1.6, and everybody goes, oh my God, the sky's falling.
Mm-hmm.
And now,
you two are completely speaking a whole language that is completely over my head.
it's amazing to see where the industry's gone.
It is.
And especially now for a guy that, it was funny, I was telling you yesterday that my NMLS number came up, which for folks that aren't familiar with that, it's your licensing number for the National Mortgages licensing system. So I realized that my Kentucky, my Tennessee one was up, and I was like, well, I guess I really shouldn't reply for that yet. But it was just pretty cool just to see where, from when I was in the industry versus to now where you guys are. It's different. Like, my brother still has his companies where I worked with down in Nashville, and he's even said it. He goes, it's crazy. Like, just the way things have evolved since I left in 2014, I feel like I'm like completely speaking a different language.
It's amazing.
At this point.
When did TRID happen? I don't even remember anymore. Everything's a blur.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember when TRID started? Was that about 5 years ago?
I like to erase that from my memory, but honestly, it's been at least 5 years for sure. But it's funny how you said, you know, just the change and evolution of not only mortgages, but hell, even what we're doing right now. It's like, you know, you used to go in the car, pop on the radio, and now it's like you pop on podcasts to listen to, you know, so many different, whether it be transformational speakers, motivational speakers, things like this. I mean, so you got that space. you know, in the real estate space, you have these online brokerages that were, they're trying to move the real estate transaction to an online presence and totally electronic. I'm competing with that as
I'm
well.
I'm not a big fan of that, by the way, as a way to do business.
Well, you never can really lose the human element, the human connection. Lisa, I listened to the podcast last time, and I, you know, there was one word that I heard out of that whole podcast, and it was connectivity.
Yes.
And you can't lose the connectivity, regardless of what medium you're using, and it does come down to, I think, again, even though it's digitized and everything's electronic, it comes to what we're doing right here, sitting belly to belly, having good conversations. And it's weird to see the evolution of everything. And then it's almost reverse engineered to what we're doing right now, is just sitting together, having a good conversation.
Which is true, because we are each connected too with each of our individual now businesses. Yeah. You with the casual pint is very significant in the real estate world, because you provide a destination for people to connect, if you will, which is then necessary for me when it comes to being able to find places that are appealing to either other commercial businesses or to other residents moving into a home. And then we have you, Eric, that helps make it all happen.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, as far as where this space is going, again, you can pretty much go onto your phone within the matter of 5 minutes, get a pre-approval to purchase probably one of the largest investments that you'll ever do in a lifetime. And we always go back to the very common thread of, you know, as easy as that is, do you really want to spend 5 minutes of investing that time, which is very little time, on the largest investment that you're ever going to do in your life? It's like, you got to invest more time into that. And then even back to Justin, like, I think it's super important with, you know, Justin's ability to, when you just walk into Casual Pint, it's like the old Cheers thing. You know, it's an experience when I go in there and he's like, "Hey Eric, how's it going?" Instead of just, you know, "Welcome to Casual Pint." You do a hell of a job knowing it's not even your customers, it's your peers,
and he knows everything that is on his shelf.
Yeah.
And he is able to walk you through what you are looking for, and which is extremely important, especially while, yes, I do have Homes and Hops, but in all honesty, I'm not experienced or well versed in craft beer or wine. I just enjoy both immensely. But that, so to me, when you have the small businesses like that, it is important to have you, and because you take pride in what you do.
And I appreciate that. I mean, part of what the OCD that does know is the walls is thanks to my wife. Honey, if you're listening, you're welcome. a lot of what goes back into, and I'll touch back into what you're saying with the digitized form. When I would lend, I would always say, and it's the same way I do the same thing in way we explain to our beverages, there's nothing wrong with pumping somebody self-serving your gas. But if you pump your own gas and that's what gives you a great experience, if you can touch that, feel that, and explain and be a part of that experience, pump your own gas. It's the same way as when you're going for the biggest purchase of your life in a mortgage. You need somebody that knows what they're doing.
Yes.
Not a computer that's spitting out a number. And I'm a huge believer in that. It's the same way when you're picking out drinks and when you're picking out bottles of wine and when you're picking out, different things. You're coming in. If I'm offering a cheesecake special, you're not going to ask me, "Well, do you have this form of cheesecake? Just what's your seasonal cheesecake?" We're gonna recommend that to you and say, "This thing's amazing," because Lord knows I'm not a slender reed and I probably ate in half of the cheesecake reed, so I know exactly what it is. But it's the ability to trust the professional or trust the person that is involved in either your A transaction or B your experience, and I think that goes a long way. And I think sometimes our society forgets that.
It's true.
In the United States, we just kind of look for speed, fast, how fast can I go and not really have to put on my clothes and still sit in my pajamas? I think that's something that people have to appreciate, and they're going to 20 years down the road and go, oh my God, why didn't we really appreciate
it? I crave
this?
It. I honestly can say I crave it. I crave that personal experience to be able to go and have that one-on-one, whether it's going for a loan, whether it's going to see a home, whether it is purchasing really any commodity out there, to have that feedback. I mean, one of the most annoying things in the world to me is when I register for something online and I don't know how to do something. I have no one to contact to help me out. It's just fill in the help or whatever you need help at with, and then they just shoot back to you something that isn't even related to the problem that you had. So I do think that localism is extremely important, and that touch point of actually having the ability to sit down with the person that you're working with, no matter in what capacity.
So I also think real quick, want to interrupt, but I also think it's a little, you know, when you're talking about generations and, you know, I think right now I think it's super unfair to the millennial generation that we automatically peg them for their lack of communication and the human connection. They just want to avoid and just do everything. I don't want to have that conversation or that touch.
I think they just don't want to deal with us because we're old.
I think everything is just delayed. They want to empower themselves with information up front, and then midway through, you know, depends on the generation where you want to just have that connection, whether it be up front, middle, or end. I don't think they remove it. It's just delayed in the process.
I agree with you completely.
It's definitely unfair to just put them in a bucket or a pocket and just say, hey, they don't want to talk to humans. It's whether it be us and, you know, whatever industry it's in. Again, I just think they're going to arm themselves with as much information up front as they can. And then that connection comes probably real close to decision time, rather than let me gather information from you, Justin, first, or you, Lisa, second. They're going to bypass the human interaction at that point and just do it at a later moment.
There's a former colleague of mine that actually sent me, I wish I could remember the video, but it completely debunks the whole idea of generation identification.
Oh, yeah.
And it basically just goes through, we all go through these phases in our life. If you go back to when they started naming the generations, I think the baby boomers was the first. There may have been one before. At least that's the first
Depression
one.
Depression era.
Really?
Depression era.
Okay. So goes back to all those times, and it basically shows the commonality of connectivity and what we would do, and how the terms that we use for people younger than us are the same as well. Mm-hmm. So it is like they're lazy. Lazy is continuously used for every generation. And really, it just comes from people who have to work 40-something hours or more a week versus those that don't. And you're probably looking back saying, well, they're lazy. They're not doing this. Well, they're enjoying themselves and what their responsibility level is at that point in time in their life. Don't be jealous. Let them enjoy it, because they're going to be at our level at one point as well. So
I agree. And there's the work-life balance.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't even really exist, because, I mean, if you think about it, how often are we working? From when we wake up to when we go to bed, the majority of our day is occupied by work.
True.
So the work-life balance is non-existent. It doesn't even exist, because it's going, you know, there is no balance if by default we're at work 8 to 10 hours out of our 18 waking hours or what, you know, whatever it is. So again, it's almost unfair to create these little pockets, these little, you know, adjectives or terms or whatever it is. It's more about harmony. Like you said, mm-hmm. if you're happy doing what you're doing, it doesn't matter where the hell you are. It's more about harmony than it is balance.
Everything goes together.
It does. It's no like, doubt. It's all circular.
Exactly. Your friendships, your colleagues, your life, everything. If you're doing something you love doing, it all comes together. It's not compartmentalized, as people will say, that they try to do.
Yeah, I'm sure he sees it at the at the bar every day.
Yeah, like, yeah, some of the things, just listening to this, it's just, it makes me, like, I'm getting, like, e-thoughts over here. which is funny for the guy behind the bar to be outside the bar. But so, like, give me an example. The coolest thing I see is watching the younger generation playing board games and having a beer. Our generation will be like, yeah, we did that like 20 years ago.
Yes.
You know, it's like we versus now it's like, oh man, let's get this brewopoly. It's brewing's a monopoly. I'm like, sure. and I'll give you an example, go back to the quality of life thing. My cousin used to live in Munich, Germany, and worked over in Germany. She transferred over. In Germany, they get 5 weeks of vacation. That's paid.
Man. I do remember learning.
Yeah.
When I took international relations at YSU and learning about abroad, like their lifestyles, their healthcare, everything, and being like, well, why don't we do that here? Well, then I learned about the political terms and I found out why we don't.
There's a lot of why questions that go around. Yeah.
But one of the things that really stuck out to me is she said at 5 o'clock, all the emails stop.
Yeah.
The whole
company.
Like everybody goes to the Brauhaus or the, you know, the brewery. They're getting liters of beer. There's usually a house DJ. Whoop, he's going crazy. It's, you know, it's Deutschland. It's Germany. They're having a long time. But I just I've been to Munich. I've seen that, and I see a lot of happy faces. And I'm like, it's got to be in the societal thing, where if we, in America, we appreciate like. The hours you put in, the hours you put in, the hours I put in, that's our happiness. Where their happiness is watching the sunset at a beer garden, which, don't get me wrong, I had happiness. I'm sitting there with a liter of beer going, damn, this is pretty beautiful. So it's that inner struggle. Where do we want to be with ourselves between employment, family, and that personal life that's really... If you're touching all three of those, you're in the Hall of Fame. You're hitting home runs.
Yeah.
Is that part of the reason why you guys decided to move back from Nashville and pick this area as where you wanted to go to?
Yeah. It's
because she's from Cleveland.
Yep.
And you're from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So did you choose this area because it sits in between, or was there any other family?
Absolutely. So for us, it's kind of funny. They almost wanted to, if she would have re-upped to the military, we probably would have lived in Poland. Because, like I said, she's fairly fluent and I can...
As I have to say,
Poland is what I said. Yeah. But they probably would have sent her overseas, either Germany or Poland, for like a deployment, which I would have been... spousal and coming too, which would have been Europe. So, but
you're enjoying a lot of those sunrises at the brewery or sunset.
Yeah.
Depends on how early you would like to begin.
It's Europe. You can have beer for breakfast and nobody judges. I'm like, I love that place. But she with us, it was like 10 hours time difference between going to Cleveland from Nashville or going to my folks south of Pittsburgh around Uniontown, PA. And I just looked at her and I said, we can be an hour and a half between both. So that was one of the areas. She got an odd job offer. And then I looked at her. I said, I think I could do this beer thing. What the heck? So we took us about 4 years. Actually, a lot of people know this. It took us about 4 years to get licensing, everything we needed to do to get it. And we looked at several spaces. My OCD would not let me till I found the space that I wanted.
But that's good. This is a big investment in your life.
Yeah, I know. And I'm saying that kind of lightly. Yeah, I know. But it's like after a while, it'll wear on you because you're looking. It's like when ladies go out and they're going out for a big dinner. Looking at four different dresses. After a while, they're looking at the same dress. They're going,
paralysis by analysis.
Yeah, exactly. and that's what it comes down to. But we really do love this area. Being now, we've been here, we'll be 7 years next year. We there'll be 6 years this year. And we really, it has a little bit of both, which is really cool.
Yes.
As a person that I guess we're still slightly outsiders coming in, it's weird seeing the southwestern part of Youngstown's very Pittsburgh versus like the north and eastern side's very Cleveland. So it's literally so like true. People told us when we moved here, they're like, you're like the epitome of a Youngstown couple. You have both. And I'm like, yeah. I said, okay. We really just didn't know. But,
makes game day fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny because we finally got to go to Indians Pirates game last year. And we literally were married. It'll be 7 years married this year. I'm making sure I got it right.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. She didn't kick me out just yet. But,
it's early. They call it a 7-year itch for a reason.
That's right. Give it time. Give it time.
Just kidding.
But I'm not. But but we went to the Indians game and the Pirates, and it's the first time. So it was like just cool because I looked around. I was like, look, there's a lot of us here. There's 50,000 like couples that have both.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, so we're not crazy. So, but no, we really do love the area. And I love to see the from now 6 years here to now seeing the expansion, the sheer growth. I'll give you an example just because of our location. 224 is literally turning into like this commercial little mecca.
It really has.
It's crazy. Like I remember you'll get a kick out of this. We were looking at houses before when we flew in. We're looking at houses, and it was when 680 had their construction. So the girl that was showing the house goes, well, I'm sorry for all this construction. And it's not normally this bad. And I looked at her. I was like, bless your heart, honey. I said, we live in Nashville. I was like,
I know.
We're used to, the D.C. life. I'm like, this is refreshing to have like one, like yes, four cars and it's not traffic. So that's probably been the nice thing with moving to Youngstown is we got to really appreciate decompressing from fast life.
It's phenomenal. And I will say when it comes to road construction and cranes and everything else that you see, okay. I get excited because to me, that's money going back into our area or a crane, even though I thought the crane was maybe for something else happening downtown, but it was just to put air conditioning units on top of a building. But whatever the reason, but it's exciting to see things that are happening in the area.
Okay.
And you knew development was happening when you saw that around or roads being done. You knew that that meant improvement. And so I always try to think of that when I get frustrated because traffic might be a little bit congested for a period until I get out of the construction zone. But it's great to see the change. I mean, we moved back about 4 years ago. When did downtown, when we moved back, already had Susie's and V2 and Roberto's. When did all that start happening? Do you guys know?
I could be wrong, but I think it the inception and the origination started out with when Mayor Williams was around, Project 2010.
Okay.
And that was the revitalization project of Youngstown and the surrounding areas. So 2010 was the kind of that whole origination of the thought process behind it. And then it just started developing. So it was slow. It was a slow process, but I mean, that I think was the kind of the origination of the rejuvenation of downtown. So it that's when the thoughts started as far as the execution of some of the construction and the businesses going down there. I know happened later, but that was, it's probably 2014, 2015, somewhere around there. It actually started, residents started seeing the businesses and then the support. And then you obviously had Cavelli going in and
yes,
the events going in like that. And
then Jim Tressel.
Tress coming home. Yeah. And then all the student enrollment, YSU is super important to have a university around with student enrollment, having the housing, student housing down there, which yes, is, the students stay down there, support down there, they walk down there. They're, it's not all just car jockeying from place to place. There's a lot of foot traffic. And then, dude, you mentioned one of the most important components that we see on the real estate side is the influx of, husband or wife over in Pittsburgh and the other spouse over in Cleveland. And the natural location is dead center of that. And we are dead center of that. Oddly enough, people know Youngstown when you're, Youngstown, oh, I know somebody from, but if somebody doesn't know it, you know, the immediate thought process is where we are right dead center of Pittsburgh and Cleveland.
It's perfect. It really is because, number one, you could always easily compare rates of which airport is better to fly out of.
Everybody has their favorite.
But the cost of living is also much better than over in Pittsburgh and Cleveland. So there's definitely lots of bonuses. But the one thing that wasn't as predominant as it is now is a little bit more of a lifestyle change that has happened. And it is because of the businesses that are opening up around our area, giving us adults, if you will, opportunities to go out and socialize and connect with other people in our community.
We're seeing it in his space, you know, with the, even the local, the craft brewers. I mean, that's something that, you know, we hear a lot of times in Youngstown. It's, well, why can't we have that there? And then the immediate follow-up statement or thought is, well, we never support that here. You know, we never support it. And to have that support in the craft breweries, just to have, you know, locations to go to and just, you know, again, the adult thing to do outside of just your normal, you know, kind of the just going downtown drinking, to have that, it's cool to see it spiral off of that. And then we're slowly changing the conversation and the dialogue, getting rid of that second statement where, oh, we don't support that. We're not accepting that anymore. And we're just doing. And that's proof with what the space that you're in, Covelli's proof of it with the Covelli Center downtown where, I mean, they're getting some super big names.
Yes, they are.
With talent that's
plus
coming
the
in.
The amphitheater.
Yeah, oh, man, the amphitheater.
It's amazing stuff. Yeah. It's awesome.
It really is. Now, what made you two both? This is my whole thing. I always wonder, at what point in your lives did you decide that you wanted to be in mortgages? So Eric, you first.
Me first. All right. So when I got my finance degree down at YSU. I knew I did not. First, I was grounded here. I've got my oldest grounds us here. We knew we were going to stick around because of my oldest son. So I knew what was certain. I did not want to be a financial advisor. Okay. So I knew that wasn't the space where I wanted to be in. I took one accounting class, and that was enough. And that was enough for me to never want to be a CPA. The numbers is just too boring. I needed to be in the advisement space. So I will tell you, this is the honest to God's truth. So back in the 90s, I went to a Foo Fighters concert in Columbus.
Oh, this would be good.
Yeah, I was at a buddy's house. Actually, it wasn't a buddy. It was a friend of a friend. So I asked Rachel, who I was with, and I said, Rachel, whose house are we at? And it was, you know, let's say Justin. I can't remember his name, but we were in a beautiful home. Columbus, Ohio, I think it was Polaris Amphitheater. And I go up to this dude and I'm like, hey, man, you know, where are your parents at? And it was probably a $500,000 house, younger kid. And he's like, oh, this is my house. And I go, well, what do you do? And he goes, I'm a mortgage broker. And I go, well, that's what I want to be when I get out of and graduate from YSU. So that was the first thought process was that. I remember specifically stating that almost, 20, 30 years ago or whatever it was. But, and then by happenstance, when I graduated, my wife, then girlfriend at the time, her uncle was a mortgage banker. And obviously coming out of college, you needed the connections, you needed to score a position as soon as possible. So I was just thrown into the space by way of my wife's uncle. And that was in 2003. 17 years later, the rest is history. So that's my story.
That's a great story. Yeah. Good.
I don't know if I want to follow that. It's like it's like Chuck Berry following like Jerry Lee Lewis when he puts a piano on fire. Like, what do you do?
What are you doing? So make shit up.
So I try. But so mine's a little bit more. Everything that I do is more far left out in left field, working its back to center field, if you're talking baseball terms. I went to school at Robert Morris in Pittsburgh, played football there for a couple of years, and got my sports management degree. I was going to law school was going to, took my LSATs, was going to be an agent. And
you look like that type.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I'm more of like a runner.
You have the three-piece suit like stuck back all the way in your closet.
There was a couple pinstripes somewhere.
Oh, that's funny.
Somewhere. But more like a rugby-sized Jerry Maguire. But anyway, I started interning with mortgage companies. With my brother was actually a regional vice president down in Virginia, and then moved back up north, and then got an opportunity with the company to go to Nashville. So I graduate in 04, and Pittsburgh at that time really didn't have much of a job market. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it was weird. I can remember literally going around the city, and it was just, because this is before Mark Cuban hit with free markets. This is like before this, within a 3-year period, Pittsburgh's employment just exploded. Of course, after I moved. But so I decided.
Meant to be.
Yeah. So my story is a little bit different. My brother was with a mortgage company. We're 10 years different. So he's older. So I was like, I'm not working for you or with you, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, perfect. So he and one of his friends was at a company I interviewed with. I literally took a Greyhound bus down to Nashville, interviewed, and within 24 hours, they hired me. I packed my life into a truck, moved to Nashville, and lived there for 10 years. And eventually, I was in big corporation mortgages. Gonna say it, I literally hated it because they just didn't understand the real needs. So I helped my brother, along with seven other people, start his company, literally, and he's now 7 locations around Nashville, and in Huntsville, Alabama, and I loved it. It was awesome, and working with your sibling can make it difficult, especially,
I think about my brother and my dynamic.
He's very successful.
Oh, yeah. You definitely know that battle, mm-hmm. don't you?
Yeah. I give credit that my brother's extremely successful. I'm very proud of what he's done.
Had to put that in there, didn't you?
Well, you kind of have to, in case he gets a recording. Hi, Mike. But yeah, so that was that. One of the things that helped me was I helped one of my buddies. We'd flip some houses. He was in the Navy, so that's how I got really into VA loans.
Okay.
And Tennessee's 33% of the population in Tennessee is military.
Okay.
Or disabled veterans, this and that. So I did a lot of VA. 72% of the state qualified for USDA. So I got really into the government loans, which I really loved.
I feel like you're a rare breed.
Yeah, I was. I mean, and probably still am, but in some aspects. But I did love the FHA. I loved all those government loans because once you got the nuances down, other than dealing with underwriters, which I know I use the U word. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes, underwriters. Yeah. But dealing with underwriters and starting to get a feel. You know, there's some great experiences, and I think that's what it goes back to. I had a Marine that came back from Fallujah. Wife is literally 6 months pregnant, sitting there. I mean, she is pregnant. I'm just going to leave it like that because you can't really see. But she was pregnant, and slightly,
super pregnant.
Slightly hormonally angry pregnant, too, because she's like, let's get the keys and start moving stuff in. So, really cool, and I got to do that VA loan. I've had some experiences. I had a lady that her husband passed away, helped her save some money, and she got to finally put a headstone for her husband in a cemetery. I'm a big grown man. I'm like fighting tears back. I know you've had those moments.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sitting there, I'm like, you're welcome. Like, you know, you're just sitting there choking it back. And those are the things that make those experiences in mortgages, in real estate and everything, is when you get that moment, when you're that like 5 seconds where it's in front of you and you're like,
it takes those other moments where you're getting screamed at and yelled at or left off to the side, all worth it.
Oh yeah.
It truly does.
Yeah. You've got to understand what position they've put themselves in. And if you forget about that, it's that much easier to understand their stress levels, their anxiety levels, because if you're, we've said it a lot. That's probably the common thread of this whole podcast, is really just understanding their position rather than what we're in it for, in our position. So as long as we,
huge investment.
Yeah, as long as you stay, you know, customer client centric and your focus remains on them, then you pick up on those small details, because like you said, they're very small glimpses of the process. You know, it could be 30, 45 days. And if your focus is in the wrong place, you're going to miss those little glimpses of perfection, why we do what we do.
And so, I teach my folks that work for me, all the Zig Ziglars and all the wonderful things. I know everybody's laughing at this point, but the Zig Ziglars and all the great speakers that I've listened to, probably the best one that I ever got to see was Lou Holtz. If you've never seen Lou Holtz,
he's awesome.
Do his Lou Holtz will make you go through a wall. I'm serious. And even if you're like, if you're not a Notre Dame fan, don't worry, he'll still make you go through that wall, because it's amazing listening to the man.
Yeah, originally from
Is this the Rudy moment?
No. Like Lou Holtz will give you. He used to speak for mortgage companies.
Yeah, he's a great, amazing storyteller.
Yeah,
like, the dude just plus he's lived through that many more stories than we have, but he's unbelievable. Unreal.
And he's from this area.
He's Liverpool.
He's Liverpool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Points for the Pittsburgh guy. But listening to him, I've taught my people. It's like, if you pay attention, because of the sales background that I had, I said, in what we do, we'll have people come in, I've never had craft beer. I normally drink the lightest possible thing. I've never had this. I said, listen to what they're telling you. And it's the same way with wine drinkers. The first thing I do is, people make the biggest misnomenclature that they do, or misconception, is wine drinkers want something sweet. But right off the bat, at least 60% of my industry thinks that. And I'm like, yeah, evidently you never ever had a Cabernet.
True.
And this is where I train my people. So you got to listen, especially with the younger generation, because we touched upon this. They'll listen, but they want to give their opinion. They're very, very emotionally opinionated into this whole generational gap.
I'm not sure if that's a generational thing. I feel like that one's across the board.
It is, but I think because of the fact...
At least I hear it from my family a lot.
But I think because of the fact with millennials having the stigma of that, they want to sometimes push that double envelope. So I tell them, I said, look, that customer's got to tell you. If they're saying, well, I normally do that or I do this, I said, well, okay, take beer out of the conversation. You probably heard me say that. Or I'll say, take wine out of the conversation, or ciders or anything. What does your taste buds tell you? And it's then they sit there, wow, I've never had anybody tell me that. Or did you just ate dinner? What'd you eat? That's the yinzer coming up. What did you eat? Make sure I slow it down. But I said, what did you eat? And they'll tell you, and I can pair due to my training, like a lager is good for anything that has garlic, clean the tongue off. These are the things you have to listen to. It's the same way if someone comes in that's looking to either refinance and they're going in and they're saying, well, here's what I really want, but that's not their pain. Their pain is what you're seeing and saying, okay, I need to save about $400 or $500 a month and I can do that this way. It correlates so weird the way that does. And now seeing it on my side, it's like there's days I just pinch myself like, damn, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
On the mortgage end, always recommend to people, let the broker know what you would like your monthly payment to be and then back it out from there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because you could be pre-qualified for much more than what you're comfortable with spending on a monthly basis, because that expense comes from, and which is not equated into your debt to income ratio. How many times do you like to go out? Do you like to go to see concerts, vacations, everything? Your lifestyle's not necessarily equated to in that DTI, depending on your spending habits, of course. But I always like to tell people to back it out on that end.
And sometimes it's reverse of that too. Where they love to host. And the most important thing for them to be is the house.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So then they can spend a little bit more on a bigger open concept kitchen. You know how it is. But again, it's that. It's just staying in tune to what, they, you know, they, as any industry professional, they always want to be led. Mm-hmm. And it's our job to help them, lead them down the path that they want to go down. And that's super important. So it's just, again, in tune. But I want to switch gears.
Okay.
And flip it on you. So please tell us. You,
Justin.
Please tell us your story on you getting into the real estate space.
I kind of fell into it. I actually graduated from YSU with a degree in political science. I had phenomenal education there. And I truly do mean that. I love every single one of the professors that I had. And then went to go work on a friend's campaign up in the Cleveland area. She won a 5-way primary against 4 established men in the, and she was under the age of 30. Absolutely phenomenal experience. And she has went on to do great things. And then I relocated to DC to work at a mail firm. So I like to blame the mail firm for deconstructing my grammar, but reality was never one of my strong suits. However, so I went and worked at the mail firm, those annoying mailers that everybody received. It was a bad year for the team I signed up for in politics, right? You have to be Republican or Democrat.
What year was this?
So not, I'm not saying because then people will be able to calculate, but I'm not really 28.
I'm just trying to extract very detailed timelines.
So,
to maybe subconsciously figure out if you're 28 or not.
So,
I'm kidding.
So my friend who was running for office was the opposite party that I was. Okay. And I will say, I used to always say I'm textbook Republican because I am very fiscally conservative. But when it comes to social issues, I'm more you do you, boo, and I'll stick with what I'm doing. But obviously, once you sign up for a party, I know we see a little bit more flexibility with our candidates now of changing parties depending upon whichever side is better for them to run. But I signed up with the Democratic Party, worked at a Democratic mail firm, and it was not a good year for the Democratic Party. So here I am, fresh meat, if you will, in D.C., without a really strong resume, competing against other applicants that did have a really strong resume. And me being the Ohioan that I am and the bills that still need to be paid, went to a temp agency, Track Legal, which ironically was from Warren.
Oh, wow.
So she she placed me, Karen Snyder, out there. Thank you very much, because really she was that pivotal point that brought me even back to Ohio. But she placed me in a temp to permanent position at Lowe Enterprises, also one of my favorite companies I've ever worked with in my life. And they hired me on full time. I learned that I loved commercial real estate. I really also loved working for the development side of commercial real estate in creating neighborhoods and the whole atmosphere and desirability and who you want placed, like what restaurant or eatery would be good, shopping, whatever it may be. It was fabulous. And they actually paid for my real property administration courses, as well as my real estate license and any memberships that I had for networking. From there, I went to Trammell Crow, which probably nobody has really, you probably heard of them, yeah. Justin, but Trammell Crow was then bought out by CBRE, another commercial real brokerage.
Mm-hmm. Still in the commercial space?
All in the commercial space. I had my first child, Sullivan, and then soon after, a little bit quicker than anticipated or planned, so there doesn't need to be the 10-year gap, I had my second son. And it was one of those things that we as a family made a decision with the cost of daycare of having 2 children that were 15 months apart was very expensive and almost equated the amount of money that I was making.
Yeah.
So I changed and then stayed at home. I give stay-at-home moms plenty of props because I lasted about 4 months before I ran for our board of our HOA, which our HOA had 6,500 homes. And then that wasn't enough. And I went into residential real estate, mistakenly thinking that I would have a lot more time on my hands to juggle both the children and my occupation, which I learned right away that that's not the case. And in some instances, it's actually more hours and time, evenings, weekends. But I do love it. I do love the personal touch that you do have. I feel like you are helping people start their lives. And I recognize that it doesn't matter whether it's $20,000 for the house that they purchase or $1.2 million for the home that they purchase, it's still a large investment that they're making in their lives. And that's how I ended up in residential real estate.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because it's when people buy homes, the realtor that helped them purchase that home becomes their people. I'm using air quotes right now, but you're a part of the family almost. It's like they trust you. They never forget about you. It doesn't matter what year the magnetic calendar that you sent them, it stays up on their refrigerator for years because they're almost, I mean, you befriend them and it's a super awesome relationship to be a part of. And there's a lot of value in being a realtor. And sometimes, you know, the grind is heavy.
It is heavy.
The grind is heavy, but I think the actual description is kind of light. It's awesome. It's not a burden. It's, you know, it's not a heavy job. The again, the time and everything that, you have to invest into it. I mean, you're running a lot. And it's cool that you mentioned, you know, the thing that I picked up on your whole, how you got into it is almost by mistake. And you needed the position. You didn't know where you wanted to be. And a lot of people like myself in college or at certain stages of life don't necessarily know their pocket. You know, it's like they're always in search for what they're going to do, where they need to be. And if you don't know where that space is, you just got to do more things. Open yourself up to more experiences. And you were open to the position where it presented itself. You said yes. And oh, by chance, I love the space. It's awesome.
It's a good story. It's a lot of fun. It's not as sexy as like Foo Fighters my bags and like went to Nashville. But you know.
An awesome story nonetheless, because again, it's unique, it's individual, and I think it's pretty badass where, again, you opened yourself up to something that was totally foreign to you. You're switching gears. You're totally going down a different path and you find out that you love it. That's awesome. People can take a lesson from that for sure.
I would say at least 80% of the society in the United States has done that because, and I think it's our way of life in the U.S. has prevented us from staying into a quote unquote pigeonhole because of things like AKA being with employment one place and the company goes out. Or be, I'm just bored with this.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and I think we as a society, we have opened that up. Now, you go back 20, 30 years in the United States, that was unheard of. Think about it. I mean, I'll give you an example. My father, 33 and a half years, U.S. Steel, retired from the steel mill, went in when he was 16. You know, my mother did insurance as a secretary and things like that, and that's what she did. I mean, they just don't. And my in-laws were machinists and factory workers. So I mean, people did these jobs, and that was it. Now we've kind of evolved, and I think that's great. I think it's really opened it up to where. You know, I'll give you an example. I used to, for a while, and I think this is kind of funny because you touched on being where you couldn't stay at home. Same here. while the store was being built, I coached for 2 years. I coached high school, 3 years. I coached high school football in Pennsylvania. And I would tell my kids that, the ones that want to play football the next level, I said, it's a job. I was like, this is not happy. Like, hey, we're going out. We're going for burgers. It's like, you're doing this every day. So it prepares you for life.
Yes. Because
you play with pain.
You're tough.
Well, I don't want to say that yet. I'm getting old. I'm getting soft in my older age.
I mean, this wasn't like the movie The Program, was it?
I'll give you one. So my freshman year, I came in as a strong safety. They had 150 kids there. They kept 120. 30 of them just walked off.
Oh, wow.
We had some amazing teams back then. And in fact, actually, our defensive coordinator just passed away at like 84. So, Rad, we're thinking about you. But the coach that was secondary coach lined up, he says, here, we're going to hit and see you on stay. Mm-hmm. I remember my arm locked, like shoulder locked in. He goes, I got that, and just put it right back into place. And I'm like, okay, I'm not back home anymore. So, I mean, you grow up quick. But I try to tell my kids that. I said, one thing that I've noticed in my life, and maybe you two could probably even speak on this too, is you're never going, not even say be satisfied, but you're never going to be bored to a point where you're in this little cubby hole where you stay there. And I think versus where we were 30, 40 years ago, like I was saying, people were just comfortable in that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think the younger generation coming up and where we're at now, you're seeing this like evolve of what's going on in society.
Well, honestly, we're all working a lot longer hours and more now. So I hope that everybody has the opportunity to be able to find something that they're at least somewhat passionate about, because it does take up a lot of our time. And we can't clock out at 5 o'clock because, well, we don't live in Germany. So we don't have that ability to say, I'm not picking up the phone anymore, because if you don't pick up the phone, then you're not providing that customer service that people, it's become a standard.
Yep.
So it's something that I mean, I'm constantly cognizant of. I don't know about you guys, but if either of you feel like if you're not attentive to whomever your customer is, then there's a chance of a loss with that.
I can speak on that because I'm now going to promote someone to take, I had a group, but I'm now promoting someone to take over the store so I can be more out to talk to people and be more involved. I can definitely touch on that because my OCD, thanks to my wife, again, hey honey, thanks to her, has made it to the point where everything in my store has a place. Everything has its own little spot where I know where it's at. And it's kind of funny. You do that with your kid. I don't know if you do it, but we do it with our kids. It's like, okay, you've got X amount of time to do this, but you're picking this up, put this here, you're doing that, or it'll never get done. And it's the same way when you're literally given the keys, metaphorically and physically, to someone to say, here, take care of my kid. And that's what it is. Me, is I always tell people, I said, yes, it's our third kid, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yep. And your businesses are the same because you've worked your way into that. You've worked your way into that to where if you have an assistant or someone that will take it from where you're at so you can take time out of it just to kind of mentally do your thing. I don't know about you, but it's difficult. I'm going golfing next week in Tampa. I am literally going to have my laptop with me in between going, okay, let me just check the camera real quick. I'm just going to do that. Make sure we're good on inventory. Because
so note to self, there's cameras.
Yeah, we kind of have that there. But
I think that just takes time to, you know, as far as delegation, comfort level, obviously you now have to be in the role of not only supporting your staff, but empowering them to do your job. And it takes time, but not only at the same time when you empower your staff, you're empowering yourself to get outside of the grind of the day to day. And honestly, man, when people feel like they're a part of something, they stay, you know, so it's your job as a leader. I mean, I know you know that, but it's just something that's cool that you're going through that right now, because it's hard to let go.
Oh, yeah.
It's especially when, you know, you said you're the OCD and the control. It's like, it is your baby. It's...
You see him cringing.
Oh, yeah.
As he's talking about passing over the key.
And it's not that I don't trust the said person.
I know. And it's that's you relinquishing control.
Well, absolutely. And the thing is, part of the high of our job is jumping into it and grabbing somebody, not physically, folks, please not, but like literally metaphorically gravitating to somebody and pulling their attention to where I've got their attention for 5 seconds. How can I make their life better? How can I make this experience better? How can I really enjoy this 5 seconds? And I explain it to my people because they're like, oh, here, try this. I ain't going to any schmuck on any street here. Here, try this. Here, try this usually means, okay, great. This thing tastes wonderful. It's the same way as like opening a door and you see somebody's got a house that it's, you can see the potential behind gutting it and doing it your way. But you go through, if you've ever seen like the DIYs where they go through and the freaking popcorn ceiling that they got to scrape off and there's like pink everywhere and you're like, oh dear God, what were they thinking? It's the same feel.
Yes, you have to be able to listen to your customer and hear what they're saying to understand. Like, my definition of open concept might be completely different than somebody else's. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the one who's buying the house. They're the ones that are buying the house. Yeah. So it's what they're looking for that's important. So I need to find out what that is, not what I think it should be.
Right, I agree.
Speaking of experiences and good times, what does the Casual Pint have coming up?
Well, we've got some, and I appreciate asking us. We've added a lot of different things. So a couple quick things we added up. We added a charcuterie plate. We added in on Thursdays with $2 off our wine pours. So
that's a few people that might be popping in extra.
Thank you. We did that for Valentine's Day and it's been a hit. I've been wanting to do that for a while. One of the things that with me expanding my role as being more administrative, it's definitely given me more chance to appreciate our clientele, who's coming in the doors, what they really want, and how we can make that experience better. One of the things I went in November. My wife had a certification. I went to Vegas in November. And I just literally, one of the kids that was with me, he runs one of the nightclubs for Steve Wynn. We got to go in. Got Chad, thank you, buddy, if you're listening. But literally...
You should have all these people listening.
I know, really. I've got like a line of people in this podcast. Good God almighty. But the experience was awesome. One of the things, we golfed for a couple of days and we just talked about the industry because he runs the nightclub for him. Drake comes in there, Chainsmokers. So it was like really cool to see this massive like $1 million style club versus my little hole in the wall. And I, in a nice way, it's a nice hole in the wall. But just learning little things like I moved some tables around to make my acoustics sound better. For when we have acoustic music. Like, I was a mortgage guy. You're usually drinking a scotch and listening to music. You're like, oh, okay, give me another one. Versus, like, not really paying attention to that. Now, you have to. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I'm going at is where we added the charcuterie. Unfortunately, during Lent, for all my other fellow Catholics that are on there, we really didn't have too many very good options for non-meat. Because I guess I'm more of a carnivore. So, but we do have some hummus and things like that. But we're going to be doing some hand-done rolls. So it's not really like a raw sushi roll. We're doing like more of a California roll. And we're going to be doing some lux. So like smoked salmon, cream cheese rolls. So a little something different. We're going to roll that out through Lent. And then... I'm just trying to think. We got a couple of dinners. I think for my anniversary this year in June, we're going to do a pairing dinner with beer and wine. And then,
well, that's convenient.
Yeah. So it's the third year. And yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant your wedding anniversary.
Oh, no. God knows she's probably like, oh, we'll just get it, whatever. It's cool. But no, for our story anniversary. And then we got a lot of things going. We're very involved with Polish Youngstown and the Free Polish Krakusi Society. So we do like a Easter Monday. We do a Dingus Day, which is pretty cool. If you don't know what Dingus Day is, it's literally a big party. It goes back to the pagan holidays in Poland, where it's kind of a mating type thing, where the men would literally take a bucket of water and, in this case, they use squirt guns, and squirt the woman they wanted to be with. Then the women would take a branch and beat the men for trying to squirt this. It's really kind of sounds barbaric, but it's fun. It really
unique.
Is.
A little unique, just a little bit. When is
it's,
that?
It's
because I'm there.
It's the 13th of April this year.
I might be in the parking lot watching.
Well, we usually have food trucks there, Polish food trucks.
Cool.
Oh.
Along with our kielbasa and pierogies that we offer, Polish beers on draft, and usually we have the Polish music playing. So we're very, very proud of our Slavic heritage. We try to pass that on. Which is something that we do with our kids, and something we've really put a force to, is trying to help, you know, as much as we can in the community.
So if people don't know, Casual Pint is located at the Shops of Bourbon Plaza by the Target down off of 224 in that plaza. And I do want to say thank you so much. This has been phenomenal. Great conversation. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Eric Romer of Union Home Mortgage.
Thanks for having me.
Which is
You're not going to ask me what I've got coming up with that. Mortgage extravaganza.
Which is located next to the Village Pump, one of my other favorite locations in the area.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are looking to find or refi right now, as Eric was saying, the rates are great, or looking to purchase a home, I would definitely speak to Eric about that pre-qualification and help you throughout the process, because I honestly have not met a better lender in this area.
Thank you. I had a great time today. It was awesome.
Yeah, thank you,
glad
guys.
Glad to be a part of it.
All right, cheers.
Cheers.